we've been going through the series called The Choices of God, and we have looked at how He chose to create this world and us, how He chose to conquer sin after the Garden of Eden and the things that transpired there. We saw how He chose to destroy and displace, how He chose to go ahead and wipe out life on this world, except for the life of Noah and his family. And He chose to displace people by confusing their languages. And then He chose to call a person by the name of Abraham. And then He chose to spare a family, the family of Lot. And then He chose to wrestle a man. We talked last week about wrestling, or if you're in the South, it's wrestling. It's not wrestling, it's wrestling, because it's all for show. And so last week was the story of Jacob and Esau. And they struggled quite a bit in their lives. The whole series is talking about the faithfulness of God despite our unfaithfulness to Him. And so this week we're looking at how God has chosen to use our sin. He has chosen to use our sin. That is something that none of us could ever possibly do and do it the right way. It only takes God who can actually do that and do it the right way. And so this week, the choices of God, how God chose to use sin. And so we're looking at Genesis chapter 37 through 50. It's the life and story of Joseph. But it's also the story of a man by the name of Judah. And we'll talk about that as well here in just a moment. And so last week, Jacob took advantage of his brother, Esau. The situation came up where Esau was hungry. He comes in from being out in the field, hunting, taking care of family business. And he's to the point that he's so hungry that he's desperate for food. And he sells his birthright to Jacob. Jacob sees the situation. He takes advantage of the situation and sells. And Esau sells his birthright for a bowl of soup, so to speak. Jacob goes on to deceive his father into thinking that he was Esau. He did this in order to obtain the blessing. And so in their society, in their culture, there was two things that was extremely important. It was the birthright and the blessing. The birthright meant the better portion of the inheritance. Whereas the blessing was kind of like the last will and testament. You wanted both of those. If you were the eldest son, normally you were given both of those. And that was just the way things happened in that society. And Jacob took advantage of the situation. He deceived his father, and he got both of those, the birthright and the blessing. And Jacob was the younger son. God is the only one who can truly change you. He's the only one who can truly change you. When we start off here in the book of Genesis, chapter 37, and going forward, you're going to see that theme continue, that God is the only one who can change. God is the only one who can truly make you change and make things right. And so as we look at this this week or this morning, we're going to see that there is division in the family. And we're going to see how that division is acted upon. And then we're going to see how God is going to use this to work out. In Genesis chapter 37, start in verse 1. Jacob lived, Jacob being the father, lived in the land of Canaan, or the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. He starts off with Joseph. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report to them, a bad report of them to their father. Now Israel loved Joseph. Now Israel's name, Jacob's name was changed to Israel. So if you see that get switched back and forth throughout Scripture, that's the reason why his name was changed to Israel. Most of the time when he uses the name Jacob, it's there for a reason. It's there for a purpose. In this case, when we talk about Jacob, Jacob refers back to the fact that he was a deceiver. He took advantage of situations. But Israel is his new name. And so in verse 3, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he was the son of his old age. And he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that, their father loved him more than all his brothers. They hated him. They could not speak peacefully to him. There was division. There was division in the family that was caused by the father. We see that in verses 2 through 4. There was favoritism. Jacob, or Israel, he loved Joseph more than the others. And the reason for that was it was Rachel's firstborn child. If you think back to the story of Jacob or Israel, Jacob, he went to Laban and he worked 7 years to have Rachel's hand in marriage, only to be tricked at the altar to get her sister. He had to work 7 more years in order to get Rachel's hand in marriage. He finally gets Rachel's hand in marriage. But Rachel wasn't able to have children. Finally, later on in his in age, he's able to have a child with Rachel. And that first child that he has is Joseph. There was favoritism. It was open favoritism. He made a colorful robe. It was a tunic. It was something that was to be worn on the outside of his garments. And that expressed his favoritism. That expressed the priority of Joseph over the rest of his brothers. This was done because Joseph had integrity. His other brothers did not have as much integrity. Joseph brought in a bad report about his brothers. And that speaks of the integrity that Joseph had. And that comes into play later on in the life of Joseph. But Joseph had integrity. And Jacob or Israel, he favored Joseph more than his other brothers. But it was also what shows us that his brothers hated him. They didn't like the fact that dad likes Joseph more than the others. And that hatred grows worse because when we look at verse 5, Joseph has a dream. Verse 5 says, now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. And he said to them, and he's kind of proudly kind of proclaiming this dream to his brothers. And he said to them in verse 6, hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf rose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf. His brother said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us? And so they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Verse 9, he goes on, he had another dream. And then he dreamed another one and another dream and told it to his brothers. He's kind of proudly proclaiming these dreams to his brothers. Behold, I have dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and even 11 stars were bowing down to me. And when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And his brothers were jealous of him. But his father kept the saying in mind. Not only did they hate him, they were now jealous of him. Joseph, when he proclaimed these dreams to him, they were not humble announcements. He could have simply in private went to his father and asked his father about these dreams. No, but he openly proclaimed these dreams to his brothers. Of course, his father rebuked him. His father rebuked him for two reasons. Well, starters, the manner in which he told it, and then the expectation that that they would serve Joseph. And this did nothing but stoke the tension between the brothers and Joseph even more. But his father father kept that in the back of his mind. Why would his dad keep that in the back of his mind? Jacob had a dream before. He had a dream before. He knows that there's something to dreams. This wasn't the first time this has happened. Here's his son now has had two dreams. There's got to be something to this. And so Jacob, Israel, he sticks that back in the back of his mind. He says, I'm going to keep that there. There's something going on here. So what were these dreams? The first dream involved sheaves of grains. Joseph's sheaf was standing. The others gathered around and bowed down to him. The second dream was the sun and the moon and the 11 stars. They gathered around Joseph and they were bowing down the same way. And in hindsight of the full story, the grain would represent the food supply, while the celestial bodies not only represented his family, but it also mentioned or related to the nation of Egypt. Egyptian religion relied heavily on the worship of the sun, the moon, and the stars. So there was division. Division was caused by the father. There was division that was caused by Joseph. And then there was more division that was caused by the brothers. There was hate and jealousy. Everything that Joseph and dad did nothing but develop hatred toward Joseph. The brothers, they did not take what Joseph said with a humble spirit. The jealousy was not just envy over possessions, but they were being protective of their position and their rights in the family. Joseph, he was the younger of his brothers. And here he is talking about the olders serving and bowing down to this younger. No. This flies in the face of everything that was to happen back in those days. It should be the other way around. It should be us serving the firstborn. It should be us serving the older. And Joseph is having these dreams. It was flying in the face of everything that they thought was the normal, the tradition. And they didn't like it. They were jealous because they wanted to protect what they had. It is our right. This is our position. Don't think you can take that away from us. They were jealous. They hated him even more. In verses 12 and 18, to kind of make things a little worse, Israel, or Jacob, he goes and asks Joseph to go and check on his brothers out in the field. Obviously, they have an issue with not following instructions of dad. And so dad said, go check on them. I want to know where they're at. And so in verses 12 and 18, Joseph, he goes to check on his brothers. He gets there and they're not where they're supposed to be. And so he finds there's a man that's kind of wandering around. He asks them, have you seen where these people are? And he said, yeah, they're over in Dan. They're somewhere else. And so Joseph goes and takes off after his brothers. Guess who sees them, or sees him coming? His brothers. The division in the family caused by the father, Joseph, and the brothers. They were tired of it. And here they see Joseph coming in a distance. They knew what Joseph was there for. They knew exactly why he was coming. Dad sent Joseph to check on us. They're already angry. They're already upset. Division is already there, and now they're going to act on that division. And they gather around and they plot to kill their brother. In verse 18, it says, they saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. And they said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come now, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him, and we will see what will become of his dreams. But when Reuben heard it, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, well, let's not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood. Throw him into this pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him. Now catch this. Reuben only had himself in mind when he said this. He said that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him Reuben said, no, don't kill him, don't kill him. Let's just throw him in the pit, because Reuben had a plan in the back of his mind. I can go back and get in favor with Dad. I'm going to go back to the pit. I'll get Joseph out of the pit, and I'll bring him back to Dad and say, look, I found him. Reuben had himself in mind. Verse 23, so when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore, and they took him and threw him into a pit. The pit was empty, and there was no water in it. Then they sat down to eat, and looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, and their camels bearing gum, balm, and myrrh, and on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Then Judah said to his brothers, now here's where Judah comes into play. Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it if we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. Then Midianite traders, the Midianites were Ishmaelites. They were descendants of Ishmael. The Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver. And they took Joseph to Egypt. Now, Reuben wasn't around, so we come to verse 29. Reuben wasn't there. So when Reuben returned, because remember, Reuben had this grand scheme in mind. He was going to probably step off to the side, come back later on, grab Joseph out of the pit. Well, when he comes back to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brother, saying, the boy is gone, and I, where shall I go? And then they took Joseph's robe and slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, this we have found, please identify whether it is your son's robe or not. And he identified it and said, it is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. And then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol to my son mourning. Thus his father wept for him. And meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. They acted upon their division. They didn't like Joseph. They plotted to kill him, and they said, no, we can't kill him. He's our brother. We've got to at least treat him somewhat right. And so we'll just sell him into slavery. That's exactly what they did. They sold their own brother into slavery. That division creates opportunity. It creates an opportunity for sin, and it creates an opportunity for good or for praise. And the first thing that we're going to look at is the opportunity for sin. In Genesis chapter 38, it kind of breaks away. And, you know, we saw how Judah responded to the situation. Let's see, his brother Reuben said, no, let's not kill him. Just throw him in the pit. Reuben had in the back of his mind, I'm going to go and take him out. And then Judah had his own mind. He said, no, let's not kill him. Let's do something different. Let's sell him into slavery. Okay, and so now we're going to go back to the story of Judah. And there's significance to this. There's a reason for this. We'll discuss that here in a minute. But in chapter 38, Judah marries a Canaanite woman and has three boys. His firstborn is not Ur. It's E-R, but it's not Ur. It's actually Ire. If you can try to pronounce it the right way. It's Ire. So he has three sons, Ire, Onan, and Shelah. Well, his first son is wicked in the sight of God, and the Lord put him to death. Now, I don't know what he did to offend God, but obviously it was enough that the Lord didn't tolerate it. Put him to death. But tradition would say that the second brother, the second oldest, Onan, would come in and marry his wife. Right? So the oldest died. The oldest married Tamar. Didn't have any kids. And so Onan was supposed to come in and marry Tamar. Well, he does that, but he doesn't like the fact that also per tradition, the kids would not be considered his kids. They would be considered his firstborn. Okay, so Onan, even though they're his kids, would not be considered his kids. They would be his brother's kids. That's per tradition. That's the way it is. And he did not like that. And he specifically did things in such a way that he would not have kids with Tamar. And God did not like that either. And God put him to death. And so now, two sons of Judah are dead. And per tradition, the third son, if you have a third son, was also supposed to step in and marry Tamar and have children. And the same thing would apply, that his children would actually be considered the firstborn's children. But Dad, Judah, didn't like this. His first two kids are dead. And he's thinking his third son is going to end up the same way, dead. And so he says, Tamar, go and be a widow, and when my son is old enough, okay, he's got this grand scheme in the back of his mind, when my son is old enough, he can come and marry you. Okay? Well, Tamar waits, and she waits quite patiently. Verse 20 of Genesis chapter 38. She waited quite patiently. It says in verse 20, when Judah sent the young goat by his friend, the Adullamite, to take back the pledge from the woman's hand, he did not find her. And he asked the men of the place, where is the colt prostitute who was at the roadside? And they said, there was no colt prostitute that's been here. And so he returned to Judah and said, I have not found her. Also, the men of the place said that there has been no colt prostitute there. And Judah replied, well, let her keep the things as her own. We shall be laughed off otherwise. You see, I sent a young goat, and you did not find her. Tamar took matters into her own hands. Tamar found out that Judah let the son grow up and had no intentions of coming back to marry Tamar. And Tamar this whole time has been faithfully waiting, because back in those days, having children was a thing of pride. And here she has gone all these years with no children, no husband. She had been shamed. She was an embarrassment now. And to see the oldest, or to see that youngest son now older, and Judas has pushed her away and not allowed the correct thing to have happened, she was embarrassed. And so she took matters in her own hand. She saw Judah coming, and so she went and changed her clothes out. She took her clothes out that said that she was a widow, put on clothes that made her look like she was a prostitute. And she stood there on the side of the road, sat there and waited for Judah to come by. And she lured Judah in, and with Judah she had twins, conceived two children. Judah took the bait, and Tamar was not going to be embarrassed like that. And so when the men came back to give the goat and to get the things back that Judah had given her as a sign of kind of a promise that I'll give you the goat, she wasn't around. She wasn't around because she had planned this whole thing out. She knew what she was doing. And she knew that here in a few months, when she started to show that she was pregnant with a child, that there'd be a lot of questions raised. And she's like, you don't cause embarrassment to me, I'll embarrass you. And that's exactly was her point. She was out to embarrass Judah. Tamar had two children named Perez and Zerah. And the chapter served as a reminder to Judah that no matter how you attempt to hinder the plan of God, God will use those attempts to make his plan a reality. Judah sold his younger brother, Joseph, into slavery to avoid the reality of Joseph's dreams. And in Judah's own family, he attempted to change the order of things by avoiding his promise to give Tamar in marriage to his youngest son. And then Judah's own twins, through Tamar, proclaimed the understanding that God will use the younger. Later on, in the lineage of Jesus Christ, Perez was considered the youngest of the two, even though they were twins. He was considered the youngest, but it was from his lineage that the person of Jesus Christ comes. And so we see that there is division, that division creates opportunity. It's an opportunity, in this case, for sin, but we're also going to see how that created an opportunity for good. In chapter 39, while all this was going on with Judah, Joseph was in Egypt. Things were transpiring with Joseph in Egypt. And so now we go back in chapter 39 to the story of Joseph. And Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had brought him from the Ishmaelites, or had bought him from the Ishmaelites, who had brought him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. And so Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and field. So he, Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's charge. And because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. So in chapter 39, we see the story switching back to Joseph. And I want you to notice that in verse 2, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. That's extremely important, that the Lord was with Joseph. It says a whole lot about the entire situation that was about to transpire. While Joseph was in Potiphar's house, everything prospered. Potiphar realized this. He put Joseph in charge of everything. The only thing that Potiphar had to worry about was what he was going to eat next. What am I going to eat? Yet while God was blessing him, there was somebody who was eyeing him. We go on to read in verse 6 as we continue there. It says, "Now Joseph was found handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.'" And this is where the integrity of Joseph comes in. You know, Joseph was a man of integrity. He multiple times avoided the attempts of Potiphar's wife to sleep with her. And one day, she kind of caught him off guard. She confronted him, and he fled away, but yet in his flee to get away, he left part of his attire. And so she turned around and claimed that he tried to make advances on her. And of course, Potiphar sided with his wife. Potiphar got mad, got upset, angry, and of course, Potiphar, being in the position that he was in, had access to the king's or the Pharaoh's prison. He threw Joseph in the Pharaoh's prison. In chapter, as the story unfolds, while he's in prison there, Pharaoh had sent a cupbearer and baker to prison. One of those two people had transgressed against Pharaoh, and while Pharaoh was trying to figure out who it was, they were sent to prison. The baker and the cupbearer both had dreams. We are talking about dreams again. And Joseph interpreted those dreams. He interpreted it in favor of the cupbearer. The cupbearer, when Pharaoh figured out what was going on, he brought the cupbearer back in and restored his position, but the baker, he had him put to death. And the only thing Joseph asked of the cupbearer was that, remember me before Pharaoh. Just remember me. I want to try to get out of prison, you know. And so just remember me before Pharaoh. Well, the cupbearer kind of forgot about Joseph. But God did not forget about Joseph. Remember that it says in 39 verse 2 that the Lord was with Joseph? The Lord didn't forget about Joseph. And so Pharaoh started to have dreams as well. And in the process of this, Pharaoh could not get anybody to tell him what the dreams were or how to interpret them. But the cupbearer knew exactly who to call upon. Joseph. He was able to interpret his dreams, so he should be able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And so Pharaoh took Joseph from prison, told him, hey, here, tell me what my dreams are. Tell me how to do this. And he does exactly that. He earned so much favor in the sight of Pharaoh for his ability to understand these dreams that Pharaoh put him second in charge of all of Egypt. There was no one more powerful than Joseph. Joseph went from the prisoner to second in command. Second in command. Joseph, in chapters 42 to 45, is dealing and working with this issue of storing enough grain so that when they go to the 7 years of famine, they have enough to live off of. And Joseph goes around, he collects everything, he has this great plan in place, it's working out wonderfully. And the famine comes, and the famine strikes not just Egypt, but the whole region. And Jacob sends his sons down to Egypt to buy grain. To buy grain. Not knowing that Joseph was in charge, not knowing that Joseph was second in command. And in splendid fashion, in chapters 42 through 45, in splendid fashion, Joseph uses all of this to reveal what God has done. And when Joseph reveals his identity to his brother, Pharaoh encourages Joseph to bring his entire family to Egypt. His livestock, his servants, everything was to come. And in chapters 46 and chapter 47, the family moves to Egypt. And Jacob, or Israel, is reunited with Joseph. And he thought his son was gone. He thought his son was lost. And then we see in chapters 48 and 49, the ideal of birthright and blessing. Birthright and blessing. In chapters 48 and 49, we see that the birthright falls on Joseph. Joseph got the double portion. The double portion that was supposed to have been to the eldest. And Joseph got that. Joseph got that because of his two sons. But the blessing went to Judah.